And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Johnny Donovan, yes indeed, we are here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. It is our Friday get-together, busy show. The health commissioner is going to join us in just a little bit. But Mr. Mayor, good morning, first of all.
John, good morning.
You have brought along a very distinguished guest.
Actually famous. There's one the bad thing I can say about Hank Paulson. He and his wife, Wendy, used to live right around the corner, and they left this city and moved to Washington. Now, it's good for the country and good for New York, but nevertheless, I lost a good neighbor.
Secretary of the Treasury, welcome aboard. Glad to have you here.
It's great to be here, John.
You have been this week talking a lot about the global economy and where we are and what state we are in. This economy is rocking and rolling, though.
Yep.
The U.S.
We have a very strong global economy and a very healthy U.S. economy, and in New York, you've got a very strong economy.
What Hank is focused on are those things that really will let this country and this city be competitive going forward. And one of the things we did this morning is we met with some people from London, because London and New York both have similar problems in terms of trying to attract businesses, particularly in the financial industry. We have traffic problems. We have crime problems. We have immigration issues to deal with. You know, all big cities have very similar problems. And Hank comes from the city. He ran Goldman Sachs before. He knows what businesses need to compete, and he's got a very tough job, and I think, it's the real bright light in this administration.
I hear people or businesses are leaving or moving offices overseas because of government regulation, Sarbanes-Oxley and other similar oversight. Is that true? Do we have too much regulation, maybe?
Well, I think we first of all, John, I do believe that New York is the financial capital of the world, and we've got the strongest capital markets in the world here in New York, and that in these capital markets benefit our whole country, and they help keep our economy strong, connect capital with people and ideas. I also believe that having a strong capital markets in London and strong global capital markets benefit all of us. And so this morning, the mayor hosted a breakfast with counterparts from London, because there are areas of mutual concern. You know, everything from physical security to infrastructure, to ways in which we can collaborate on financial policies, harmonize regulation, those kinds of things. Now, in terms of getting the right balance here, I think it's always a issue that in our country, innovation leads regulation. When there are issues, we shine a light on them. We move often very quickly. Sometimes the pendulum swings too far, but I think we've generally got it right in this country.
Now, do I get you, gentlemen, correct that you're talking about linking up is maybe a little strong with London?
Hank and I both come from a world where in some issues you are competitors, and then for some issues
are
partners. In some issues they're your customer, in some issues you're their customer. And, you know, it's not the simplistic world of good guy, bad guy, white hat, black hat. Everybody's together. We in London both have an interest in stable markets around the world and full disclosure and transportation back and forth. There are an awful lot of British companies that have offices here and an awful lot of American companies that have offices there. And the stability of the world, for example, fighting terrorism is a worldwide problem. So, you know, at the same time, I'd like to see businesses move here from London, and they'd like them to go in the other direction. The truth of the matter is I've always thought that New York has a better hand to play. And it's having said that, unless we keep working on making our streets safer and bringing down taxes and making regulation fair and understandable. Doesn't have to be less, but it has to be fair and understandable.
Now, the subprime issue is a global issue, is it not? It's not just a United States problem.
Well, John, you're right in the sense that capital markets are increasingly integrated, and And given the complexity of the product and the integration of the capital markets, it's something that's being worked through. Now, I happen to believe we're making real progress in the capital markets, and that virtually every one of our credit markets are doing better today than they were a number of weeks ago, a number of, than they were in August. So we're making progress. It's going to take some time, but we're working through it against a backdrop of strong global economy and a very healthy U.S. economy. So I see real progress.
Are the overseas London markets doing similar things that we see being done here, funds being set up to balance the availability of credit?
Well, I would say we're looking at these issues with regulators, policymakers looking at working very well together, coordinating together, and I think there's good progress being made.
The cost of the oil, $92, I think, this morning. How yeah. concerned are you about that?
Well, there's it's not a positive for the economy, but I would say I if you'd looked back a year or two ago and you'd asked policy makers whether $80 oil or $70 oil would be a big problem for the U.S. economy. I think many people
would have predicted doom and gloom. Nobody. I mean, when oil was
The economy is just rocking and rolling. I mean, unemployment is virtually zero. I mean, it's not zero.
Unemployment is the employment situation is very strong in this country. There's no doubt about it. And we're creating new jobs 49 straight months. What I like to see in oil at a lower price, yes. But we are using energy more efficiently than we were a number of years ago, and this economy is held up very well against that challenge.
I know you've got a schedule to keep, and I want to keep you on that schedule, but the tax discussion of this week with Charlie Rangel's proposals, that's got to concern, I would think, you and the administration for the long term. The long-term effects of rising taxes.
Right. Well, first of all, I think the issue you're talking about is the alternative minimum tax.
Correct.
And I think we've been pretty clear on this. This is an unintended tax, be a tax that would surprise a lot of Americans if it went into effect. We had in our budget and proposed at the beginning of the year so-called patching this, making sure that 25 million Americans weren't hit with this tax. And again, I don't believe the right answer here is to increase other taxes to pay for that relief. And I think if you start raising the top two brackets or having a surcharge, you're going to hit a lot of small businesses.
And it affects you, Mr. Mayor, at home, if indeed on a national level takes place.
Absolutely. It will certainly hurt New York. Look, everybody wants lower taxes, and I don't think anybody would argue that higher taxes are good. Having said that, you still have to pay for services. Yeah. So at least at a city level, we have to balance our budget. The federal government has some more flexibility. But I think what people want to make sure is that government provides good services that are needed efficiently. And then they're much more willing to listen to the arguments of who pays and how we collect that money.
Yep.
All right. Henry, I know you've got a schedule, Mr. Secretary, to keep. Thank you very much for coming up. Thank you very much for bringing the Secretary.
Hank's a great American. He really has done a great job for this country. And this is a time I've always thought when we really need great representatives around the world. And when he's out there representing this country, I feel an awful lot better.
Well, this is it's very, very mutual because this is a great city and it's got great leadership right now. And it's a real source of strength to this country. And, all of New Yorkers I know feel very, very good with the progress that's being made in the city and under Mike's leadership.
Thanks for coming today. Let's take our first break. We'll be right back. What's with the staph infection? The Commissioner for Health, Tom Friedman, will join us when we come back along with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. It is a Friday John Gambling Show at 77 WABC. And Mr. Mayor, we've got the Health Commissioner, Tom Friedman, with us. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you again. Unfortunate circumstances, though.
Yeah, a child in our public school system died of a staph infection, and while staph infections are very common, this is a particular kind of staph infection that doesn't respond very well to treatment and can be very serious. And, you know, staph, a lot of bugs with time learn how to fight the tools that we use to kill them. And it is a very worrisome thing, and it's a reason why you probably will never get ahead of all diseases.
But at the same time, it is extremely rare. I think a lot of people are worried, Tom.
Absolutely. Staph infections themselves are very, very common, and they're usually treatable. But a death in a healthy child is extremely rare. It's a terrible tragedy, and our hearts go out to them. Most staph infections look like a pimple or a boil, and if you're worried about them, by all means, see your doctor. It's spread not easily. It's spread by skin-to-skin contact or sharing towels or other personal items like razors.
So the washing of the hands truly is important.
Hand washing is very important, either with regular hand washing or with an alcohol-based hand cream, and not sharing personal items like razors or towels.
In hospitals, it's an even bigger problem, isn't it, because of the concentration of what goes on in a hospital.
Recently, the CDC just did a big study on this, just came out a couple of weeks ago.
Center for Disease Control for the rest of us.
And that found for the first time that it is pretty common, but about 9 out of 10 people with it, with serious infections from staph, got it in a hospital or other healthcare facility. So the hospitals have to continue to strengthen their ways of controlling infections.
Mr. Mayor, have you talked to the school's chancellor about washing of hands and encouraging and educating?
Yeah, we have lots of different programs in the schools to do everything we can to keep our kids safe. Needless to say, when you have 1,100,000 kids, kids will be kids, and it's hard to get them to eat healthy. It's hard to get them to wash as much as they can. It's all part of getting a good education and learning how to take care of yourself. And we have, you know, a Healthy New York program. Tom's been very aggressive in terms of trying to attack the public health issues and education of children in how to take care of themselves and to bring home the message to their families if they see something at home, you know, and say, Mommy, Daddy, I was told at school you should not smoke, or Mommy and Daddy, I was told you should, you know, wash, or we should do something different, cook our food differently or whatever. Those are really important parts of the educational process.
And you think that these the Purell products or and like products actually are beneficial?
They work very well. If you've got very dirty hands, then by all means soap and water is going to be better. But anything is going to be good. So regularly washing your hands reduces your risk of getting serious infections.
All right. I understand that you are both pushing to put the calories back on the menus.
The only serious public health issue in this country that is growing is obesity. You see more and more people with having lost a leg or toes or something, they're coming down with diabetes comes out of obesity. You look at kids in schools today, too many of them are way overweight. And if they're overweight as a child, they're going to have a very serious problem as an adult. And we have to make a decision as a society. We all recognize that everybody says obesity is bad. Okay, what are you going to do about it? What Tom has proposed is simply give people the information so that they will know what they're eating, and then hopefully an educational system will convince them that it's not good to be overweight and not good to eat some of these things. Some of the chains, Subway, for example, posted the calories.
You're talking about the sandwich
shop. Subway, the sandwich shop, it's all over the country. You see Subway's, I don't know how they all make money, because some of them you see two blocks from each other, and I love Subway sandwiches. I think they're great deals, and good for the money, and tastes great. But they actually list calories, and I think it's helped their business. And people, studies show, eat fewer calories at Subways. They just pick. They still go to Subway. They still buy things they like, but they pick those things that have less calories. And in fact, some of these chains, and this only applies really to chains, you have to have lots of stores with that cook things exactly the same way and exactly the size.
The local restaurant does not have to do.
There's no ways they could do it. It'd be nice, but they could just couldn't tell you how many calories. But when it's standardized, you can do that. And, you know, they for liability purposes, a lot of these chains put the information out on the web and say, oh, well, we told the public. Well, come on. When you're making a decision, as important as what it is and the price is how many calories in it. And I don't know why they should, you know, if people will, you know, you're still going to go to the same stores just pick something that's a little healthier for you.
Let me ask you this, because we had a discussion this week on this program about the fact that maybe obesity is in part at least due to the fact that food is now so easily gotten. It used to be that, you know, you would have a meal and you'd go someplace where it was cooked and you sat down and it took an hour or whatever. Now we eat all the time. Is that a problem? Is that part of it?
It's part of the problem. You know, we haven't changed our genes. We're not made up differently. We're not any greedier than we were before. We're kind of hardwired to like sweet and salty food. What's changed is that food is everywhere. It's less expensive. And you can buy a huge number of calories for a very little bit of money. If you just look at hamburger, fries, and a soft drink.
Does sound good.
It sure does sound good.
It's increased by more than 200 calories in 20 years, just the portion size. So it's everywhere. It's bigger. It's less expensive. We're not sure what's driving the epidemic of obesity, which really is about the only major health problem, as the mayor said, that's getting worse
but
in this
global.
Country and city. It's global. It's national, New York City, and globally. But we know that we need to start taking some steps to bring it down.
But it, you know, it seems to happen even in economies that aren't nearly as robust.
Well, some yes, some no. What's changed here is we no longer, as a society, tend to do physical labor for employment. A lot more people work sitting at a desk. Less exercise, you burn fewer calories. That's not good for you. As Tom said, food is less expensive as a percentage of your ability to buy things, and it's certainly more plentiful. There are restaurants every place. You know, look, I love going get a Big Mac and fries and a milkshake, but there's an awful lot of calories. So if you could eat smaller portions today, you know, that some of these portions are very, very big. And in fact, if you take a look, the public – Go back to smoking ban, but the public understands that smoking's bad for you, and a lot of people have stopped smoking, and it's had a big impact around the world. Trans fats, you know, some of the newspapers say Tom's been a nanny. Trans fats are bad for you, and most restaurants have now cut it out, and nationwide.
And nobody knows the difference.
Nobody knows the difference, and nationwide, every package good now, it says no trans fats on it.
Well,
we could do the same thing. If you post calories, let people make, nobody's taking away your right to do it, but giving you the information. My argument is that is something that's appropriate.
I should point out that the Harvard School of Public Health has awarded the city and the you two gentlemen the Julius B. Richmond Award. Now, have you gotten that yet?
Monday evening. I'm sure you're going to be coming up.
I will be.
I'm actually going to take my mother. I'm going to take my mother. Because I'm going to give a speech, and she's lives 20 minutes away. I thought she'd get a kick out of it, and I said, would you like to come? She said, well, I'd have to see my schedule if I can move some things. And she's 98, but she's busy. So, but she has changed her schedule. I'm happy to report for the press, and she's coming.
You and Tom and the city of New York have gotten a number of these awards for, obviously, the initiatives that you've
Life expectancy in New York City is now higher than in the country as a whole. If that isn't a testimony to the work, number one, that Tom's done, and to make it, isn't that government's job to make you live longer and life better? And that's why our employment rate is at a record high. That's why our population's at a record high. People are coming here. Not everybody likes to have government involved. But we're not telling you you can't smoke. We're simply saying you can't pollute the environment where others work. We're not telling you you can't use trans fats. We're telling you you're bad for it, and if some stores use it, you're free to go there, but you should know that. We're not telling you you shouldn't eat a lot of calories, but at least you'll have the information to make the decision.
All right. Tom, great to see you. Thank you very much for coming in today. Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let's take our half-hour break. We're coming right back. All right, coming up, as we always do at the end of the program, your chance to ask the mayor a question. The number, if you want to get in line in the queue, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. MTA fare, there's going to have to be one, it seems. I mean, if you look at the,
well, look,
over the longer
haul. If you want to have mass transit, somebody's got to pay for it. Surprise, surprise. Then there's only a few questions. Are you giving the appropriate level of service? Are you doing it efficiently? And who's going to pay? Now, in reverse order, who's going to pay? There's two possibilities that I can think of, or three maybe. One is the strap hanger, One is the general taxpayer, whether it's through the state or the city or the federal government. And then another is you pick a group that you're trying to encourage a different kind of behavior, for example, congestion pricing, and you could get money for subsidizing mass transit from that. I think that's a terrible idea, incidentally. We should use monies from congestion pricing to expand the service, make it safer.
Not maintain what you've got.
Not maintain. But the issue is the very limited number of who could pay. And in fact, the ways we do in our society, when you have A or B, the answer is yes. You know, they do a little bit, Congress and the Senate and the House and the Assembly and the City Council. I mean, all legislators do exactly that. That's the real world, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. The question is, is it being done efficiently? Well, it's easy to take shots at the MTA. I've always fundamentally defended them. I will say the subway that I ride every day is an awful lot better than it was in 1966 when I came here today. It's air-conditioned. It is reasonably reliable. I will say I got stuck the other day for about 5 minutes. It's so annoying. Okay, 5 minutes once in, you know, every 2 years is not exactly bad. There's very little crime, almost so low you can't even measure it. You don't see very many vagrants or panhandlers. And, you know, it's a lot better than it ever was before, and they deserve some credit for that. And if you're never willing to give them credit for doing things, you can't attract good people to make it even better. What, in fact, we want to do is we want to whip them when something goes wrong. But no, you know, nobody writes the story. Somebody once told me that the way the press works is nobody writes a story that 2,000 planes landed safely today. You know, that's...
Yeah, it's the one that did.
Right. So, okay. Well, we all know why, but that's okay. But you still have to, when things are going well, give them credit. And they can always make it better.
On the fare hike issue, short-term rather than long-term?
Well, there's also the issue of... what is going to happen to the costs? Labor is going to continue to go up. You know, your workers want to at least keep up with inflation and actually would like to do better. Thank you very much. The cost of security, we want more security in this day and age, which means more police. It means more installation and maintenance of cameras and other kinds of security devices. There's all of that kind of stuff, the maintenance on old stuff that wears out and has to be replaced, all of that stuff. So you know that cost are going to go up. Now, the revenue side is a little bit hard to predict. Everybody says, oh, they are surprised. Look, they're incompetent. There was a surplus all of a sudden. Well, the surplus they had the last time was an unexpected increase in real estate transaction taxes, and the state didn't expect it, and they got a surplus. The city didn't expect it, and we got a surplus, and the MTA gets a piece of that, and they didn't expect it, and they got a surplus. But that doesn't change the underlying fact that their costs are going to go up with time, and unless they improve the system, they won't get more riders, which they need to have more revenue, and that will help the whole economy by reducing congestion. And the question is, if you know it's going to go up, or that you're going to have more expenses, when do you start collecting? Now, some people say, I demand that they don't do it this year. They should do it next year. Look, we in the city don't wait for a disaster and then raise taxes. I'm trying to make city government more efficient and save money now because I know we're going to have big deficits down the road. We tax now, and when we don't reduce our taxes down to where it just matches our expenses, we try to put some money away for the rainy days down the road, and it's not inappropriate for the MTA to do it. What I've said is my position on a fare increase is I want to see the numbers, and I have four appointees on the MTA board, haven't seen the numbers yet. Lee Sanders, who runs it, I think is a very competent guy, and he's, you know, new, but he's doing a good job, and the new chairman that's just been approved, he's going to have a little while to learn, but nevertheless, the other thing is, before I want us to consider what to do about the fare, I want to know how we are going to expand the service. The MTA has a responsibility for providing mass transit for the whole region, and there's lots of parts of our city that doesn't have it. We have to make that mass transit fast and faster than driving in a car, because if we don't do that, nothing else works. The city's economy is really getting hurt, and our air is getting polluted. So, you know, the MTA came up with an estimate a few weeks ago of $750 million that are needed for improvements. Some of those things, I'm not so sure they were in the budget before. Why they just counted them again, I don't know. They were going to do them regardless. But we do have a unique opportunity with congestion pricing of the federal government promising to give us $354 million. That would be half of what the MTA estimates. And the congestion pricing will generate, I don't know how much it will generate in terms of reducing traffic, but I do know you can make some pretty good estimates about it generating revenue that can be used for mass transit. It will generate $300-plus million a year.
As you heard in the 10 o'clock news, said your facts and figures are way out of date.
The assemblyman has his own opinions, and he's Richard Brodsky lives in the suburbs, represents the suburbs, and has lots to say about the city. The truth of the matter is that some numbers, you can always say, oh, I don't believe your estimate. You can't run a railroad that way. The estimates, in this case, the professionals, can tell you pretty much what's going to happen. It's we have a lot of experience from London and Singapore. Stockholm's coming in. But we'll see. I don't think you should rush to either have a fare increase, nor should you automatically say that we shouldn't have a fare increase now. You got to find out how you're going to provide the service that the public needs and has a right to expect, who's going to pay for that, and then how efficiently we're doing it. And do we want security earlier or later? Do we want to have more service earlier or later? And what the costs are.
Speaking of service, your garbage plan has run into a pothole in the assembly.
No, it just hasn't come up yet is a better way to phrase it. And I think, you know, my hope is that in the end we can explain to the state assembly that we need to have a law change so we can go through this park, the Hudson River Park, and use the transfer station, because it is only fair in the city that every borough takes care of their own garbage, and this is the only viable ways for Manhattan. If we were to move it elsewhere, there'd be $300 or $400 million more, and the state nor the city doesn't, or the taxpayers don't have that kind of extra money. And there are really only three people in the assembly who are objecting to it, and I find it strange that they do. It's their district. But Chris Quinn, our city council speaker, it's her district for the city council, and she has been in favor of using Gansevoort, and she said in all the last two or three years she's gotten, I think, five complaints or something in two or three years. The public is willing to do it. It's just for reasons I can't understand.
Well, the speaker said the city administration has failed to live up to its promise to seriously explore alternatives. Now, you and I have talked about this for as long as we've been doing this program.
We will be happy to provide any information and do any study that's required. We've done a lot of them, and if there's any study that anybody else would like, I'll be happy to do it.
All right. I was interested to hear that the daycare providers, 28,000, will be joining the UFT. Do you think that that is going to affect the way the city's relationship with the UFT develops?
No, I mean, it's our main issue with the UFT is where they represent teachers. This is a different thing, and it probably won't have anything to do with
you
it.
You don't think that needs of the daycare providers could conflict?
But that'd be a union problem.
Right.
They'd have to figure out how to represent two very different constituencies that have very different interests, very different pay scales. Randy Weingarten's a smart woman, and it's a well-run union. That's their problem. We would deal with them totally separately.
All right, we've talked about Lower Manhattan and the development down there. Disappointed that Merrill Lynch said they want to move into Midtown?
I don't know that Merrill said that. I think that people have speculated that that's what they're going to do. Last I checked, they were open to anything. My first interest would, I would like to see them stay downtown, because downtown's still recovering from 9/11, and that would be the best thing, I think, for the city. But as long as they're staying in New York, I guess you breathe a sigh of relief, and the West Side will be a great place to have a business. My preference would be downtown, and we'll do what we can to help them. We're not going to bribe anybody to stay in the city or to come to the city. We're going to use our tax revenues to make the city better. And I think Merrill understands that. That's why they want to stay in the city. But it's a private company, and there are private developers who will make different offers, and best man win.
The water issue has been one that we've talked about over the recent weeks here, more so than I think we've ever talked about it at all in our particular history. Water amnesty is now on the table. Do I sense that you're kind of moving to put this thing to a head and kind of solve the problem?
I hope that we can solve the problem. Everybody pays, or virtually everybody pays their property taxes, because if you don't, we put a lien on your building. Water, a lot of people say, well, if I don't pay, there's no penalty. Nobody's going to turn off my water.
Last week we talked about digging up the shutoff valve.
Well, in a lot of places, there's no shutoff valve, so you got to dig it up and put a valve in. But, and it's amazing, once you take a red marker and start marking where they're going to dig the next day, checks come in very quickly. Yeah, I mean, this is just an outrage that some people aren't paying their fair share and they raise your rates and mine because of it.
All right, why don't we take our final break here, then we'll go and talk with you on the phone. You have the chance to ask the questions. 1-800-848-WABC is the telephone number, 1-800-848-WABC. We will be right back. WABC. We continue. John Gambling here at 77 WABC with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And now it's your turn. 1-800-848-WABC is our telephone number. Time for you to ask the questions. Mr. Mayor, let's start with Mary out in Brooklyn. Hello, Mary.
Hi. Glad to speak to the mayor.
Go right ahead.
Okay. We have a situation where our mailman has not been delivering the mail properly. For example, he takes junk mail, just gives us the junk mail, but doesn't give us the important stuff like the federal papers, the recertifications for Medicaid. It's going on for the last year, and we tried with, good things.
Mary, where does that mail go?
We don't know where that mail goes. We'd love to know, because these are important things. We lose out on our Section 8 appointments. We lose out on our food stamps appointments, the entire building. It's the we're all feeling the same way. We tried, we always gave him tips. We were very nice to him, but we felt that he's just doing this on some kind of reason that we can't understand. We approached his supervisor, Ms. Davis, and we spoke to her quite a few times. But it doesn't seem like she keeps saying that there are certain numbers that are not correct. But he gives us a junk mail to those mailbox numbers. Everything is correct.
Well, let's see what Mr. Bloomberg can do.
I hate to duck this and say it's a federal government issue because we don't run the post office. My first thought would be call the supervisor, but it sounds like Mary's already done that. I guess what I would do, Mary, is I would send myself some mail, letter every day, and then keep track for a week or two of how many actually show, and then you can go down to the supervisor and say, look, here, this is what I did, and you can see there's something wrong, because you have to prove to them probably before they ever do anything.
That's probably why you got became mayor.
Is that right?
That's pretty clever.
That's pretty clever. I'm just sitting here, and Mary calls, and...
Okay, Mary, good luck. Let's go to Roger in Queens. Roger, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
A question regarding costs for the MTA or basically general of the city itself. When you were talking about raising funds for the subways or whatever, you're talking about taxing somebody else or taxing everybody. If I had a private business and my cost went up, I would have to pass it on to my customer. So very simply, why don't the strap hangers pay more? That's number one. Number two, there's no impetus for lowering costs, because as long as there's somebody around to pick up the tab, taxpayers, then pay packages, maybe buying things cost more. When I was a young man, when I was working, I'm retired now, my pay package was better than a city worker. Now the city worker's pay package is better than mine, and their frills, their benefits are a lot better.
Okay, Roger, look, it's a couple things you're talking about here. One, keep in mind that the MTA workers are not city workers, and I don't know what their pay packages are. City workers make... in some cases they make a little more than in the private sector. In most cases they don't. Some people would argue have better benefits and more stability, and they a feeling of public service. But it's really hard to compare what you can make in the private sector to the public sector. And I happen to think that you're right. There is no, and I don't have a good solution for it. But the question is, how do you have an incentive for the management of the MTA to do things more efficiently?
That's true of all government.
And that's true of all government, because fundamentally, finally you go and you say, I need more money. And people scream when you don't have something, and nobody ever screams when things are going well. In terms of your first thing, though, Roger, I think you're wrong. The strap hangers pay some, and the taxpayers pay some. And the argument is the strap hangers pay because they get a benefit of the ride. The public gets a benefit of fewer cars on the roads and people that come to the stores and come to the offices and build your house and all of that sort of stuff. So since everybody shares, you sort of split the cost among different ways to pay for it. If you were going to design the perfect system, Roger, you would not charge the strap hangers anything. You would have a free mass transit system, and then you would have congestion pricing with very high costs, very high charges, because you would like to get as many people into mass transit and as few people on the roads as possible. That's the perfect system. Politically, that's just not going to happen. We are so far down the road, you'd never put that genie back in the bottle. But if you're going to design a system, you would, interestingly enough, have the taxpayers and the drivers pay for it all, and the strap hangers pay for nothing, although we, as I say, we split it.
I read an article about a town in West Virginia with at a university who split campuses, and they did exactly that. They wanted to get the traffic out of the town,
right,
and they put in a light rail system or a people mover type of system, and they give it away for free and to encourage people to use it.
Right, that's the way you would do it. I mean, capitalism works. You know, if you make something cheaper and something more expensive, people go from the more expensive thing to the cheaper thing. Not everybody, not all the time, but generally speaking, there is a real, capitalism works.
All right. Leo, real fast, what's your problem? Because I've got 10 seconds. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, Mr. Bloomberg.
Okay.
John. I have a question. We have a city-owned tree in front of our house that's raising our sidewalk about 5 inches.
I'll tell you what.
Call 311, and they can send you to the Parks Department. I think it's Parks Department or Department of Transportation that actually Department of Transportation. They redo sidewalks. Call 311, and they'll help you.
The time goes by too quickly every Friday. Thank you very much for coming.
Next week?
Next week, next Friday, same time, same station.
Goodbye.
See you then. Have a good week. Stick around. Chris Wallace coming up.